This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. A push for gun control is picking up steam on Capitol Hill. Members of Congress from both sides of the aisle are calling for regulations of bump stocks after the mass shooting this week in Las Vegas. Meanwhile, the future of redistricting rests in the hands of the U.S. Supreme Court. This week, justices heard arguments on whether to district maps in Wisconsin are too politically gerrymandered. The ruling could change the way state legislatures draw maps in the future. Joining me now to talk about that and more is political junkie Ken Rudin. Another busy week, Ken. Welcome. Good to talk with you.
To everybody who thinks that thoughts and prayers are going to change things in this country. But I like to offer them.
Well, I appreciate that. We lost just a little bit of the beginning of that, but I'm assuming that that is the what we heard at the end was a heartfelt a sense of grief over what happened this week in Las Vegas.
No, actually, I was being kind of ironic in the sense that everybody is talking about offering thoughts and prayers. And once again, after this mass shooting, as we've seen in Las Vegas, Congress seems to be very reluctant to do things, but as you point out with bump stocks, there may be some kind of movement from the NRA and others, but some people say that's not enough.
Bump stocks, of course, that little fitting on the stock of the gun that allows a semi-automatic weapon to act like an automatic weapon. But there might be some regulation on the sale of bump stocks.
But there is a difference, of course, between regulation and having a review of what whether this is legal or not, and banning them outright, as some Democrats are talking about. So while the NRA is saying, well, maybe there is no reason for them, and maybe there should be more regulation of them, that's not to say that that's not exactly what gun control advocates are supporting. And of course, as could be expected, once Congress started talking about banning these bump stocks, the sales have gone through the roof of them around the country this week.
Right. And, of course, I guess what critics of this are saying, nobody's criticizing some regulation on bump stocks, but, well, maybe there are some, but there seems to be widespread support for some form of regulation of bump stocks. But, of course, those who want more would point out that bump stocks were not responsible for the deaths of 49 people in Orlando. Bump stocks were not responsible for the deaths of 33 people in Blacksburg or 20 children and a total of 28 dead in Newtown, Connecticut. That's not really the fundamental issue, the critics would say.
Those are fair points, but again, after all these things, these horrific things you mentioned, that with Newtown and, you know, Sandy Hook and Orlando and San Bernardino, yes, it was not bump stocks. But every kind of regulation, every kind of suggestion brought by Dianne Feinstein, Chris Murphy, and other Democrats in Congress were rejected out of hand by Republicans. Now, Republicans will say that, look, there's no saying that these laws, these restrictions that the Democrats are proposing would have stopped these horrific murders, and they may not have. But, of course, that also means that nothing has changed, nothing has been done. Background checks, keeping guns out of the hands of people on the no-fly list, those things have not been implemented at all. Would they have helped? We don't know, but nothing has been added to the gun laws.
No, and the only correlation they would make, and what I would say is that those who want more gun control would say, well, you're controlling something here that wouldn't have stopped those other things, but guns were responsible for the mass killings in those places. Knives could not have caused as much damage. Cars could not have caused as much damage. And so I think that's what the critics are saying, or the real gun control advocates are saying, no, something needs to be done. Compare gun control laws in the U.S. to any other country and then compare the mass shooting deaths. And that's where I think the advocates of stronger gun control are pointing at this moment.
That's correct.
So let's talk about the NRA, because we've said that they have been staunch opponents of any form of gun control, even after these horrific mass killings that only guns could have caused in such great numbers, and yet steadfast, and Congress supports them. What about? Let's take a look at the funding now, because we see a report this week from the Center for Responsive Politics that shows North Carolina Republican Senators Richard Burr and Tom Tillis among the top five members receiving NRA funding. What does that mean?
That was pretty remarkable. I had no idea. I mean, obviously, you know, first of all, I should say that number one is John McCain, and most of that money came from the NRA during his 2008 presidential campaign against Barack Obama. But seeing that Richard Burr is number two among all the senators, he got nearly $7 million of contributions from the NRA, and Tom Tillis, number four, I think what it's saying is that both times, both elections, with Burr's election and Tillis's election, North Carolina has been a key state in Republicans' hope to either winning control of or maintaining control of the Senate. And, I mean, if you look, you and I have talked about this in the past, about how key, how crucial these two elections are. And the NRA obviously knew it, too, giving all that, you know, total money, $7 million to Burr, nearly $4.5 million to Tom Tillis. They are number two and number four in the, of the total senators of money from the NRA.
Now, it's interesting, too. Let's talk about this to try to analyze this politically, because if you poll Americans, most say there should be some form, more guns need to be controlled in this country. And that's what a majority of Americans say, no matter how you ask the questions. And then you say, well, here are the people who are receiving a lot of money from the lobby against gun control. But there doesn't seem to be a connection there between people saying, oh, well, if we think there should be more and they think there should be less, what's the connection between popular feeling about gun control and those who get reelected, whether or not they propose more?
Well, I mean, we did say, and Bill Clinton will say this over and over again, that in 1994, one of the reasons that the Democrats lost control of Congress in the Gingrich Revolution was because of the ban on semi-automatic weapons. Those weapons that were banned by Congress, they came back to bite Democrats in the end. But yes, Americans do say that they want some control over guns. But if you look at the people who go to the polls, the people who think of guns as a key issue, it seems like from most studies that people who support or who oppose more restrictions of guns are more inclined to vote as a key, using guns as a key issue than gun control voters. So, yes, more Americans, especially after these tragedies, talk about, yes, we need more restrictions on guns. But those who go to the polls every year, it seems to be more pro-gun enthusiasts than gun control backers.
They're more likely to vote out someone who voted against them if they're pro-gun than if you are anti-gun. You have a list of issues, and that may not be on the top of your list. So that's one of the things I guess you're saying. So now let's look at the Supreme Court. Gerrymandering, been with us for a long time. The courts have had a long time to look at whether or not drawing these crazy maps that always are in favor of the party in power, Democrats and Republicans have been using it for decades. If we had been here for millennia, they would have done it for millennia. Now the U.S. Supreme Court seems to be, Ken, perhaps poised to restrict, perhaps, political gerrymandering. Tell us more.
The key word is perhaps. And let me just say something about the word gerrymandering. You know, it comes from Governor Elbridge Gerry of Massachusetts. When his party redistricted some districts, state legislative districts, it was back in 1812. So partisan redistricting has been with us for a long, long time. The Supreme Court every now and then looked at it. They say, well, it's more of a political issue. The courts couldn't get involved. But there is a court. There is a case coming before the court. They heard the arguments on Tuesday. It's Gill versus Whitford. And basically, when the Republicans won control of the Wisconsin State Assembly in 2010, afterwards they drew districts in such a way that even though Democrats got more votes statewide on assembly races, Republicans got an overwhelmingly number of the districts. And the reason that happened is because they drew the districts in such a way that Republicans would win. Now, in the 1980s, when Democrats had most control of Congress and state legislatures, Democrats did the same exact thing. Whoever's in power does it. I mean, it's not just a Democrat or Republican issue, but I think most people feel that it's more egregious than ever. And once again, you have Anthony Kennedy in the key seat of being the swing vote, because you have four liberals who probably want to overturn partisan redistricting and four conservatives who ostensibly or probably want to keep it going. It was interesting to hear what Anthony Kennedy asked of the people talking about the case on Tuesday. It seems like he's not happy with this partisan redistricting, but we don't know. I mean, we've seen these kind of questions before justices before, and they don't always tell us how they're going to vote. And again, you know, everybody may not like the thought of this partisan redistricting, but is it an issue for the court to get involved in? And that's really the question that Anthony Kennedy is probably asking himself.
All right. And whether or not there's a rule against which you can apply this, a standard against which
right.
you
what
can
makes
measure.
Exactly. What makes it more partisan or egregious? I mean, by definition, when you have redistricting, it's partisan because whoever's in power, except for the few states that have nonpartisan commissions, these legislators will rule it, you know, will draw the districts to benefit their own party. That's the way it's always been.
You know, I don't have too much time left, but I want to talk about Rex Tillerson now and the president. Rocky relationship, apparently, but the Secretary of State tried to patch it up this week.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he had held a press conference to say, I'm not resigning, makes one think about whether he's resigning or not. Look, one, we did see the strange spectacle of President Trump undercutting the Rex Tillerson when it comes to negotiating with North Korea. And then when NBC News reported this week that Tillerson, in a private conversation, called the president a moron, which Donald Trump obviously didn't like, Tillerson says he's here for the long road, but I suspect he's not going to be there much longer, especially the fact that his influence with world affairs has definitely weakened.
It didn't, and he didn't deny that he called Donald Trump a moron.
Right.
And so what's interesting about that is, and somebody else had to report this to NBC, which is to say, you said out loud to somebody, Donald Trump's a moron, this is Rex Tillerson. Somehow in that next paragraph, resign had to come up, but maybe not, possibly not, who knows.
Well, exactly right. I mean, obviously the relationship between the two is not strong,
And
it'll be up to Tillerson to decide whether he wants to stay. Obviously, Jeff Sessions got tremendous criticism from the president. His decision was to stay on. Let's see what Rex Tillerson decides.
All right, we will, and we'll talk about it in a couple of weeks. Ken, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Frank.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. You can find links to his stuff at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we take a look at the makeup of registered voters in North Carolina and why some voters, more and more in fact, are choosing to be unaffiliated. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.